This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk SummerSlam. Chris Graham here on Street Knowledge, and we're building towards the big wrestling event of the summertime. And SummerSlam, as we're recording this podcast, just about 10 days away. Actually, a big weekend, also an NXT TakeOver on the schedule that we can talk a little bit about. Title match there that is intriguing. SummerSlam is it's the midpoint of the WWE year. WWE year either starts or ends depending on your perspective with WrestleMania. That's in April, and then SummerSlam is always midsummer. It's August, late August, and it's sort of, you know, it's definitely the big wrestling event of the summer, and storylines build towards it and then away from it towards Royal Rumble, and then from Royal Rumble, the road to WrestleMania. And so it's a nice card. I like the card we have put together. Let's start at the top, the two title matches. And the Universal title match getting the attention with all that star power there. Brock Lesnar and all the talk about whether or not he'll continue with WWE if he loses in the fatal four-way for the championship belt, that Universal Championship, the Raw World Champion, if you want to say. It's Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe. You've got Roman Reigns, who's a former world champion. You've got Braun Strowman and Joe, who've not won a title at the top level. Joe, a couple times former NXT champion. Of course, his long run in TNA with Impact Wrestling as well. And Braun Strowman coming off that very interesting ambulance match from the last Raw pay-per-view with Roman Reigns. I mean, all four of these guys have got a lot of heat with each other. The storylines have been built up well there. And, I think going in, you could make a case for any of them walking away with the championship gold. And so that's interesting. I mean, that's one of those fun things for us as wrestling fans. A lot of times we think going into a show that we know what's going to happen. You know, I'm certainly not buying the story being sold us that Brock Lesnar is going to leave WWE. If he loses this match, we know that, for example, you know, at least behind the scenes, he's booked for the September Raw pay-per-view. He's under contract to WWE through WrestleMania. Now, we know that. We don't know, of course, whether or not he's got some escape clause. All this talk between him and John Jones. John Jones at the last UFC pay-per-view after his big win over Daniel Cormier, calling out Brock Lesnar. And there's been a lot of media attention on that. So we don't know what's to work and what's real. My strong feeling is that what's real is that Lesnar's probably got to work himself into UFC shape. He looks pretty good, especially for WWE's sake. And, this could just be cross-promotional kind of interactivity between the two that we've seen before. So there's uncertainty there, though. Roman Reigns, we know, has been getting the big push for the last 3 years maybe from WWE higher-ups. Braun Strowman, a relatively new addition to the main event scene. And Samoa Joe, sort of the wild card here. You know, I think he was an afterthought, his match with Lesnar at the last Raw pay-per-view last month. Great Balls of Fire, sort of a placeholder. You know, the idea that WWE could advance the Reigns Braun storyline. Maybe the original thought for SummerSlam was a triple threat match with Lesnar, Reigns, and Braun being there. And then Joe put on a hell of a match with Lesnar and has inserted himself into the mix. There are some thinking that Joe might walk out of the SummerSlam with the belt. I'm not quite sure that's the case, but boy, I think a case could be made in any of a number of ways that any of these guys could walk out with that championship. So that's exciting again for wrestling fans. For the WWE title on the SmackDown brand, you got Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura, that surprise win last week over John Cena on SmackDown to earn that number one contender slot for that WWE title. I read a compelling op-ed on Bleacher Report, I believe it was today, making the case that a Nakamura win would actually be bad both for Nakamura and for Jinder Mahal. And I'll kind of go through the general thought process there. I thought it was an interesting read. The idea that for Nakamura could be a bad sort of gesture and maybe not the best long-term career move, in that Nakamura, really, the build for him since he made the main roster debut back in April hasn't led us to think that this is a logical next step for him. You know, he had a sort of a middling feud with Dolph Ziggler that didn't really advance anything. And then the Baron Corbin, you know, at least theoretically, we don't know where that's going. I think, and I'll talk about my thought where that's heading in a minute. But you know, at least on paper right now, you know, it wouldn't seem to make sense that he would be the champ. The build hasn't been there. And then from a Hall, he's been the champ for about 3 months. And, you know, maybe that's not quite long enough to build his, you know, build him up in terms of being a legitimate top level guy. And he's seems to me to have played himself into that role. He's a guy that should be getting that kind of a push. You know, he's got the look that came about later in his career. He was a little guy for the longest time in his career. And now Mahal, you know, he's beefed up, bulked up. I wouldn't even say bulked up. Bulk doesn't describe the hardcore look that he has. And you know, they've built the Singh brothers around him, the former Bollywood boys, you know, giving him stooges now, giving him Great Khali. It just seems like that there's a stable building around him. He could be a really good heel champion for a while with you know, sort of a Ric Flair. I said this on a podcast recently, a kind of a Ric Flair Four Horsemen kind of a approach. And so you take away his streak, you know, take away his heat that he's been building up, and maybe, you know, putting the belt on Nakamura doesn't really help Nakamura that much. Now, where I will depart from that is to say, what if the ending of that match, and I don't think that's the main event. I think the main event is the Fatal 4-Way pretty clearly. But what if the ending to the Mahal Nakamura match is Nakamura wins the championship, and then but is so debilitated by whatever happens during the match that Baron Corbin then cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase, and then we see what makes sense, that Baron Corbin and Nakamura had that feud for a few months in the summertime that didn't really seem to be going anywhere. In fact, Baron Corbin at the last SmackDown pay-per-view losing intentionally by disqualification with a low blow. What if then that makes sense? Corbin comes in, cashes the Money in the Bank briefcase, wins the title. He leaves SummerSlam as a champion. And then Nakamura and Baron Corbin chase each other around for a few months. Nakamura sort of becomes, in a way, a Daniel Bryan type. You know, he tastes the – or CM Punk did the same thing at SummerSlam a few years ago. You win the belt for just a couple of minutes, and then you lose it. So you can technically be a former champion, but, you know, you kind of feel like you got screwed out of it. And the fans will certainly, you know, could be asked to buy into the screw job, right, that you lose the belt that way. And you could really build up, you know, and certainly Baron Corbin, you know, we'll talk about Baron maybe next, that would really build his character up too. And so, you know, maybe the thinking could be that Jinder Mahal's already kind of built up what he needs to build up at this stage, and let's, you know, let's move in the next direction here. So it's, you know, and actually if we get what we want for WrestleMania next year, what a lot of us want anyway, an AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura match for the WWE title at WrestleMania. If you have Baron Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura chasing each other around all fall, and then say at Royal Rumble, Nakamura gets a match with Baron Corbin and wins the belt, then AJ Styles wins the Royal Rumble, then you got one of your main events there. So things could be, there's worse ways things could play out than that, actually. So I said we would talk about Baron Corbin next. Let's go ahead and do so. We'll skip over for just a second the AJ Styles Kevin Owens U.S. title match and talk about Baron Corbin. Just last night, match made, Baron Corbin and John Cena. They needed dance partners, didn't have them, so now they do. This is a chance for Baron Corbin to win or lose, showcase himself as a top level guy. This is probably the third match, third to last match, I should say. But it could be earlier in the card, and the only reason it will be earlier in the card, and this is something to pay attention to. Think back to WrestleMania a couple years ago when Seth Rollins wrestled Randy Orton. Pretty good match on that particular WrestleMania. I think that was 31, 32. The one where he ends up cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase and winning the title from the Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match. Well, he wrestled that match against Orton very early in the show, but about the first hour of that lengthy show, and then had enough time to recoup, etc., and come back out later and steal the show at the end there. If this Cena Corbin match is played earlier in the show, I think that's going to be the tip to us that that Corbin is going to be a part of that main event, or the semi-main event later in the show. But in any case, again, he gets a chance with John Cena. You know, he's already got that Money in the Bank briefcase, which tells you that WWE thinks he's a guy that they can put something, you know, put a belt around and build around. This is a chance for him to finally show it. He's not really had a chance since winning that briefcase to wrestle the top-level guys, except for Shinsuke Nakamura, who himself's climbing a ladder, too. But Corbin hasn't had a chance yet to establish himself as a legitimate top-flight guy. Here's a chance with John Cena, who we know is on his way back into hiatus with movies and TV dominating his fall schedule. And so Cena doesn't really benefit much with a win. I don't think he benefits anything with a win, to be honest. Let Corbin put a good match on with Cena. Maybe give Cena some chance to save face with Corbin winning through some dastardly means. The chance again there for Corbin to really shine, and then maybe set the tone for later in the show with a perhaps surprise win in that injecting himself in the title picture. Speaking of titles, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. Boy, they've put some good shows on recently. I know this is, segment 5 or 6 or 7 in this quick feud they've had over the summer, but I'm never going to complain about AJ Styles and Kevin Owens working with each other on a TV show, on a house show, whatever the case may be. And they're both the level of guy that it doesn't matter who wins. I mean, it doesn't. They've traded the U.S. title 2 or 3 times in the last, month or so. I don't really, honestly don't care who wins. I think it's just going to be a great match. I think it's pretty clear that, a way I would like to see things go, just for the sake of continuity, if things go the way I think, famous last words, we're 10 days away from a pay-per-view show. Nakamura wins the match with Mahal. Corbin cashes in the briefcase, walks out with a belt. Jinder Mahal needs a dance partner, and he could take on AJ Styles. AJ Styles, if he's the U.S. champion, then you got Mahal. He can kind of sneak in, steal that belt away from AJ at an upcoming pay-per-view show. That could put further legitimacy. WWE has done a great job, I think, in the last few months of building up that U.S. title, also building up the Intercontinental title on the Raw show. Those titles had been forgotten for a while. They were almost props without any meaning for the longest time in WWE. But when you've got AJ Styles and Kevin Owens fighting for that strap, when you've got Dean Ambrose and the Miz, constantly feuding over the Intercontinental belt, that really is adding a level of legitimacy to those belts. That then, if you were to slot Jinder Mahal as your U.S. champion a couple of months down the road, coming off the heels of a world title run, that's pretty much what AJ's doing right now. And actually Owens, too. Owens was the Universal Champ. AJ was the WWE Champ earlier this year. Both those guys held those belts earlier this year. So the fact they're fighting for the U.S. title here means that's a worthwhile title. Definitely not an afterthought. And so there's a way to, continue building Jinder Mahal again. So that's, I'm getting away a little bit from SummerSlam, but I think, maybe AJ wins this one. We figure out what to do with Kevin Owens next, and kind of move on from there. But as you can see, to me, there's a lot going with this show in terms of how things can be built for the future, and the show itself should be interesting. Tag team title match, New Day Usos. If you listen to my last podcast, that match from the last SmackDown pay-per-view, one of my favorite matches of the year between these two, was the opening match of that show. And I just love that match, and I love this rematch. I could watch these. It's kind of like Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express. I could watch these guys wrestle for the next couple of years and not be bored by it. These are two great teams at the top of their game. I think all-time classic tag teams. Usos, I wasn't a big fan of them at all. I wasn't a fan in any way when they were faces. But the Usos as heels are without peer at this stage. And the New Day, of course, they can do anything. They can, in fact, they usually wrestle as heels, and they just happen to be faces. But boy, that's a match made in heaven. Congratulations to WWE for stumbling upon it, and I think they stumbled upon it. But it's been a lot of fun to see this feud develop, and we'll continue to see it moving. A couple of matches that, as we kind of go through the card here, that they're thrown together. Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt. Give WWE credit. They're trying. The creative team at Raw is trying to build something between these two. But I think the Bray Wyatt character, unfortunately, is just too far gone. They've, you know, the creative did not treat that character, which had so much promise, with any kind of care, any kind of attention to detail, that at this stage, I mean, Finn Balor sort of even used this in his promo on Monday night, saying that, I don't know that, you know, Bray Wyatt's a guy who cares about wins and losses. Well, no, WWE clearly doesn't care with Bray Wyatt's character whether he wins or loses. And, you know, in the end, I mean, yeah, I understand, you know, it's sports entertainment and the outcomes are predetermined, etc. But, you know, there still is a scoreboard. You know, they still do count to three or have a, you know, referee disqualify somebody or count somebody out or somebody submits, taps out, whatever. There still is a winner and a loser, whether it's predetermined or not. And Wyatt, unfortunately, has come out on the losing end way too many times to be believable as a badass. And so, you know, selling him again as a badass against Finn Balor at this stage, it feels like Wyatt is just there to elevate Finn Balor, which is odd in one sense. Think about this. Finn Balor debuted on the main roster last year. I think it was around SummerSlam. And then in September won the inaugural, you know, Universal title. And of course, we all know that he was injured in that match when he won the title. Early in that match, actually, with Seth Rollins, to a point where he had to give the title up the next night. He was in rehab for several months after. He's now getting a push back up towards main event status. He walked in with main event status, got a belt put around his waist, and now he's having to work his way back up the ladder. But that's what this feels like. It feels like a Finn Balor showcase and a chance for Balor. Now, what I'll be looking for on SummerSlam night, a couple Sundays from now, is whether, you know, Wyatt, of course, we know his character is, you know, the dark guy and everything else. Do we see the Demon King emerge? Do we see, you know, Finn Balor take on that more dark character himself to answer the challenge? I'd like to see it, just because I don't think the main show fans have seen that side of Finn Balor. If you were an NXT fan, you certainly did see that. And it's a fun addition to his character that I think I'd love to see debut. I think that's if this feud with Bray Wyatt does anything, it should bring that out and give us a glimpse into what, you know, you don't want to use it too much because then it becomes his character. For the most part, you want to see Finn Balor sort of, you know, the straight-laced guy who wears the leather jacket in the ring with no face paint. But, you know, it would add something special if he comes out with all the face paint on, all the body paint on, like a, you know, the ancient Celtic warrior that his character's named for, and save that for the big matches, but certainly use this. If there's ever a time to bring that character out, it's definitely now. And so I hope that the build continues and then we get to see that at SummerSlam. That would make logical sense. Randy Orton and Rusev, this is a thrown-together match of all thrown-together matches. I mean, literally, these two guys had no heat with each other, and now all of a sudden they do, just because I think, what was it, Rusev was talking on the microphone about something, and then Orton's music started playing, and all of a sudden they got beef with each other. That's pretty much the build-up to this match. What a come-down for Orton. He was world champion at WrestleMania, right? And now he's probably in the first or second match against Rusev, a guy that, you know, has had a push a couple years in the rear view now. He had a push. But, you know, WWE had a good thing, a great thing, with Rusev and Lana. How did I screw that up? Rusev and Lana, they were hot. I was at the Richmond Coliseum for a live Monday TV show. This would have been back in 2015 when the whole spiel, the shtick was still Rusev was from Bulgaria, sure, but he was in, you know, Bulgaria is in the orbit of Russia. Lana being a native Russian, they would, you know, put Vladimir Putin up on the screen and the Russian flag and all that stuff. I mean, man, you couldn't hear in that arena when he came out for the segment, and I'm sure at that time he was still engaged in a back and forth with John Cena. You could not hear. The live crowd could not hear what was being said in the ring that night when Rusev and Lana were talking. You know, you had to rely on the TV microphones to pick up what was being said. You folks at home watching could hear, because you could not hear in the arena. It was that loud. I've not seen that much heat on a guy, God, in 20 years. Now Rusev's an afterthought. Lana is attempting this, you know, misguided career in the ring. She's clearly not, at this stage anyway, capable of and she's not deserving of the shot she's being given. And honestly, she should be in NXT training if she's going to be doing anything in the ring. And what value is that? You know, boy, her value being the mouthpiece of Rusev. I mean, that was gold. I don't get this booking at all. And this thrown together thing with Orton. You know, if Rusev doesn't win, he's an enhancement talent, which is just unfortunate for a guy who had that much heat a couple years ago. Kind of reminds me of how Ryback was, you know, for a brief time was at the top of the game and then forgotten pretty quickly thereafter. And speaking of guys forgotten, or about to be maybe, Big Show and Cass, Big Cass, with Enzo Amore suspended above the ring in a shark cage. That makes a lot of sense. You know, this is clearly a showcase for Cass. I like it. I mean, you knew all along from the time that Cass and Enzo made their debut on the main roster middle of last year, early last year. I guess it was before WrestleMania season. You knew that eventually Cass was going to spin off into a singles guy because he's got everything that Vince McMahon likes. He's a big guy. He's not very good on the mic, but he's a big guy. He's a big guy. That's pretty much all he needs in Vince McMahon's universe to get a push. And, you know, he had Enzo there because Enzo could talk for him. And Enzo can't wrestle his way out of a paper bag, but damn, that guy can talk. And he is, you know, he's very valuable as a talker. He's clearly his career, his future is as some sort of manager. Now, whether he knows that, whether creative ever figures that out. And so, yeah, you know, I can see the breakup, you know, let Cass, you know, get some heat on himself. A big guy as a angry giant type guy. Here he gets a chance against Big Show. Show towards the end of his career, you know, his job now is to sort of be that guy who, you know, you get the big victory over and then you get to move up the next step on the ladder. That's what this is going to be. You know, gosh, who knows? You know, I'd like to see a swerve. You know, and you know, I don't know if it's not going to happen anytime soon, but I'd love to see a swerve with this down the line, where Enzo and Cass reveal that they were working on this all together. You know, swerving fans, swerving whoever, swerving Big Show, maybe. And if it does happen, then it would be great. Because man, you know, fans are still going to root for Enzo just because he's very entertaining on the mic. But having him cut heel promos. Speaking for Big Cass, who can barely put two words together, that'd be a hell of a team. That'd be a hell of a team. And I could see Cass with Enzo as his mouthpiece, literally writing checks with his mouth that his ass can't cash, and then making Cass cash those checks for him. You know, there's some money to be made there, I think. But we'll see down the line, right? So, you know, I guess at the beginning of this podcast, I was complaining about the lack of build. There's actually been decent build for the most part here. Looking at the matches I didn't cover the women's matches. I'll quickly say not very excited about, to say the least, those matches. A little disappointed that Bayley doesn't get her title shot, and mainly just because I was rooting for Bayley to beat Bliss, Alexa Bliss, and then that feud that we've been simmering under the radar, but even beneath the surface quite yet, with her and Sasha Banks was about to explode thereafter. Now that's off the table. I mean, Bayley's out for a while. So, you know, Sasha Banks has got to figure out, they got to figure out a new, you know, dance routine for her. I am not impressed with Naomi in any way, shape, or form. I don't think she works well in the ring. I don't like her. I mean, her lack of verbal skills on the mic whenever she's given an opportunity, whether in a quick interview format or when, God forbid, they give her a mic and have her do live commentary during women's matches. It's just, it's nails, fingernails on a chalkboard bad. As is the case with Alexa Bliss, to be honest. The with this women's revolution, I think we found out pretty quickly that it was Sasha Banks and Charlotte, and those are two supreme wrestlers. And I'm not women's wrestlers, men's wrestlers, they're two supreme talents. And the women's revolution was totally built on WWE masterfully playing up the fact that they had two once-in-a-generation superstars peaking at the same time, working together in the ring like clockwork. And I understand when the brand split was done why you would try to put one on one show and one on the other to try to, you know, obviously build up, you know, as much as you can there, right? Have two women's divisions rather than one. But, you know, as a result of them being split apart, we don't get to see them interacting at all, whether in a ring or just feuding with different factions or whatever the case may be. And WWE struggled to replace that chemistry. You know, Bayley has her fans. Her work in the ring is still a bit green, and she's been, you know, she had a few years in NXT. She's been a champion a couple times on the main roster. She still botches some simple stuff in matches. Alexa Bliss is too small, in my opinion, to be believable in any way, shape, or form as a champion. You know, why not put a belt on Nia Jax and let her run with it for a while? As big and powerful, and she's being booked and has been booked as this indomitable force for a few months, but yet no belt. That doesn't make any sense. You know, maybe she wins this number one contenders match and against Sasha Banks, and she gets the belt at SummerSlam, and then makes Sasha chase her for a while. Maybe that makes some sense. On the other side, I don't know. Natalya, no offense to her, just that I'm done. I'm kind of like with Randy Orton, just same boat with Natalya. I've seen you enough. There's nothing you can show me at this point that's going to make me interested anymore. Thanks for, you know, maybe take a couple years off and come back and we'll figure something out later. But, and again, Naomi, I don't know what the appeal is there. You know, I think if I was running WWE, I might remerge the two women's divisions into one and put them on one of the shows or both the shows or whatever, because they have the cruiserweights on both shows, effectively, with 205 Live being live after SmackDown for the live audience, the house show audience. Maybe put the women on, you know, whatever, put them in one division, because right now they've split the talent up too much, and we're not getting the best stuff. So those are my thoughts there. That probably gets us close to wrapping up for this particular podcast. I am very much looking forward to SummerSlam, though. And, oh, and I didn't mention NXT. I mentioned earlier and didn't follow up. So quickly, NXT. The matches at TakeOver, the one that's got my attention. I love Bobby Roode. I've talked about that on podcast before. He's a great NXT champion. Eventually, we know he's going to be a top star on the main roster, SmackDown or Raw, whichever they choose to put him on. But for right now, man, he's really adding some legitimacy to that NXT belt. And Drew McIntyre is his opponent at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. And I am looking forward to that match. You know, if I could rank the matches this weekend that I'm looking forward to, it would be the two world title matches, effectively world title matches at SummerSlam, the AJ Owens match, Cena Corbin, and then certainly top five is going to be Roode versus McIntyre. Roode McIntyre might be, you know, three or four on that list, depending on where. And that's a loaded set of matches. And New Day Usos as a tag team match is up there too. Roode versus is McIntyre. I don't know where that's going to go. I assume that the belt stays on Roode. If he loses, you know, I mean, the second he loses, he's heading to the main roster. I don't think it's quite main roster time for him yet. I think that, you know, that said, though, McIntyre was part of that, you know, that enhancement talent 3MB with Jinder Mahal, as it turns out, also part of that group back a couple years ago in WWE. And then when his contract ran out, he was let go. He goes to TNA and was a top star there and proved that he should have been a top star all along. And, you know, I think he's ready for a run. I look at Drew McIntyre, man, he's in great shape. His TNA days towards the end, he was, you know, looking a little loose, a little chubby, a little soft. He is clearly back on some sort of a you know, very rigorous training regimen. He's got abs of steel again. You know, he's looking, and he's bigger than he was in his WWE days. So You know, he looks the part. I think he and Jinder Mahal trade training tips or whatever. I don't assume that they're juicing like some fans do, but maybe they've got something working together because they're both in great shape. And McIntyre's ready for a run. If that's the case, I think that means Rude jumps up to the top level. I'm not sure that's the case. So, any case, I don't know what's going to happen there. I'll leave it at that. Looking forward to seeing it. That's the thing. To me, the NXT shows on weekends when there are takeover events before a big pay-per-view, those are pretty good shows too. So don't miss that show on Saturday night next week. We'll do something next week, our last preview of the big weekend coming up. And also this week, yesterday, switching gears big time, did a nice behind the scenes with the folks at the Wayne Theater here in Waynesboro. They have a production of Shrek the Musical coming up. And I did a little walking tour of the cast and crew getting ready for their final dress rehearsal last night. And a video version of a podcast. And man, as of when I just last looked about an hour ago, 2,200 people had watched it. Obviously, there's some interest going on. And one of my more successful podcasts and videos of recent date. So looking forward to getting out this weekend and seeing that. I mentioned, I think, yesterday on one of my podcasts about how getting ready for college football season, I do broadcast of home games for VMI, a 1AA FCS school down in Lexington, Virginia. Got a scrimmage coming up this weekend that I'll be getting my first look at the VMI team. Coach Scott Wackenheim and players, I'll talk with some of those folks after the scrimmage is over on Saturday afternoon. So looking forward to that. And I think we'll talk some UVA football at some point this week as well. So a lot to keep us busy here at Street Knowledge on AugustaFreePress.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reading the website. Really appreciate the comments and the continued interest. So I want to thank you for all that and wish you a happy and safe day. Take care.